Welcome to Cartridge Command, your weekly retro gaming podcast where we discuss and review the classic
and not so classic games of the 8 and 16-bit era. I'm Nick.
And I'm Eric.
And I'm Dale. And this week's game is Shadowrun for the Sega Genesis, Part 2.
Yay, that's right. This is a patron request coming at you from Radiant Blur. So thanks to you yet again, Mr. or Mrs. Blur.
Yeah, apologies for taking so long to get this complete, but we're here.
That's right. And we're going to jump right back into it with, we'll start off with a peek at this game's manual.
Heck yeah.
Did you look at this much, Mr. Dale?
I did indeed. I was upset to find that there wasn't a lot of artwork given all the lore and all the interesting artwork in the game itself. This manual is very light on that, but it does have a lot of useful information.
Yeah, this is a very bare bones, but no frills, shall we say, manual. It is packed with info. It is 48 pages, so this is a beefy tome.
Yeah. Not super pretty to look at, but this would have been huge to have while playing through the game because it includes some maps of our areas.
That's right. You get some mostly unlabeled maps at the end. They have
it's about as bare bones as you could get. I mean, it's just black and white lines, you know, text. But that's it.
It definitely, you know, in the starting area, it lets you know many of the locations in the Redmond Barrens. And of course, all this is black and white, and like you said, there's no artwork, but there are 4 screenshots, so I guess you have that.
And real quick, I do want to mention that it would be very, very helpful if this game included maps in itself, other than the map to traverse from area to area, because there is a lot of locations in this game, and if you don't write them down or make your own maps, you're kind of screwed, unless you have access to the internet.
Yeah, the various spots, I have like 10 different buildings in them, so it takes quite a bit of getting used to locations to figure out, you know, what buildings where and stuff, so that would be nice.
Of course, once you spend enough time poking around, you kind of just memorize where everything's at, but getting started is rough.
For sure, and like you kind of mentioned, there is no real story in the manual. You get a little bit of like background about the world and Shadowrunners and stuff, but that's really it. All for the story, pretty much it's all told in game.
Yeah, I will say that the game is very light on telling you about the Matrix and how it works and how to do those runs, but the manual includes a lot of information.
Yeah, which is, we're going to get into the Matrix a bit here later, and it doesn't have to be a big part of the game, but it kind of can. It's kind of weird. It's there. It doesn't really ever force you to use it. I don't know.
Yeah, that is hard. That is one of the interesting things about this game, and it was fun doing research for this episode, because when you read on forums and you look at comments on videos, it seems like everyone plays this game a little bit different, you know, and it really is a true RPG in that sense, where you can play this however you want. For instance, we'll get into it as we jump back into level by level, but for my playthrough, I barely touched the Matrix. Honestly, I did, you know, I was running and gunning, man. That was how I made my money.
Right on, yeah. I was kind of reticent to go into it. I put it off for a long time. And then when, I don't know, I kept reading about it. It's like, oh, you can make all this money real easy. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. But eventually it's like you kind of figure it out. And then I understood. But like several things in this game, it's kind of got a tough outer shell that makes it kind of obtuse to penetrate at first. But I think it's worth it. But yeah, so, and this manual, you know, goes through in a great detail. You know, it describes all your controls, how combat works, your inventory, you know, the way to use your magic controls, you know, like we said, the Matrix, shadow running, all that good stuff. And it's highly useful even today.
Yeah, I mean, I've already mentioned it once before, but I almost wish some of this stuff was, I hate to say it, but I wish there were a tutorial in the game, you know, because it really kind of just throws you in. So this manual kind of fills that gap, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a manual defender. So I like to be able to look it up, but you know, that assumes that the manual is well done. And I think this one is pretty well done.
Yeah. And funnily enough, so in the game, we've got our trauma patches and we've got our stim patches, but I don't think in the game it's actually referred to as a slap patch, but they call it a slap patch in the manual, which is what it was called in the Super Nintendo version. You know?
Yeah. I think that's from the actual, the tabletop RPG.
Yeah.
Yeah. That got borrowed over, but I did want to say that at the end of this manual, you get an advertisement for the another Sega Genesis game, Landstalker. Have you ever played this?
I have not heard of this one, but I was just looking at that.
It's been on my list for years and years. It's a really fun, I think it's a later Sega Genesis title, but it's a isometric.
Yeah, 3D isometric, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It looks
future
fun.
Future episode? So, we'll see.
Any Landstalker fans out there, let us know. Okay, and as we kind of teased in the previous episode, we might touch back in with some more of our recent experiences. Dale, any developments in your adventures in future Seattle?
Yep, so I guess a little peek behind the curtain for the listeners, but there was a pretty long period of time between recording episode 1 and episode 2, so I had a lot of time to poke around in this game. When we recorded episode 1, I was around 30% done, and since then I've gotten all the way to the final boss, but I have not beaten Thon yet.
Ooh,
which is our final boss.
Gotcha.
So I'm at the very end of the game. It's just literally at this point, my only goal is to get some money, buff up my party, and buy some better equipment and just go kill this guy. And that's it.
Gotcha. Yeah, I started a second playthrough because I wanted to play around with the magic systems more. So I was kind of doing that and experimenting with different shadow runners. Like I set up Winston Mars and a couple of, I got these two big brute guys and just had them using hand-to-hand combat. So that was pretty fun. It's actually really effective. And
yeah, I was a big fan of Trent. I had Trent on my team. He was who I pumped a lot of my time into to buff up, along with Eileen Two Fists, which she becomes sort of a main character, I guess. There's a story mission that comes along with her later on.
Yeah, she's a good fighter as well. I had her and Winston as my two like other people. I sat in the back casting spells I don't know, to some effect. We'll get into that. I think we'll probably delve more into the magic next episode because that's a whole separate thing with its own rules and stuff. So
that's the thing with RPGs and just the nature of I guess doing a podcast about these kinds of games. There's so much we could sit here and talk about. It's, you know, to keep it tasteful is difficult sometimes.
I'm like, nope, I want this to be the audio equivalent of a wall of text. But yeah, so you know, progressing right along. All right, so the Matrix is a weird kind of part of this game where you can use a cyber deck, as long as you have a data jack, you can go to any of the kind of quote-unquote phone booths, and you can from there jack into the Matrix. You either do this because you have accepted a Matrix run, and they will give you a kind of like an address, basically, where it's like you'll log in and you can select that. And that'll take you to the one of the many.
I think there's 15 total that you can you can go visit.
15 so different kind of computer networks.
Yeah, and they all have different maps, and this, as I understand it, is one of the best ways to make money in this game. So it would behoove you to get a decker on your team or be a decker yourself.
Sure, a lot of the more expensive or higher paying shadow runs you can do are Matrix runs where it'll be like, go here, get, you know, jack into this and get a certain kind of file. That's what we're looking for. And you can hold, I think, 5 different types of files or information that you have upload or down. Okay, I'm trying to think of the proper words here. You have procured from the system. And, you know, those will pay well.
Yeah, so as previously mentioned, I didn't really play with the Matrix a whole lot, but it's robust, man. Like, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot to do. I mean, for instance, you have, 6 different, 7 different cyber decks you can buy, which is going to change your experience inside the Matrix.
In the interest of brevity, I don't think we need to get too far into it, but there are, not only do you get different cyber decks with different capabilities, they're all like upgradable. They all have their own stats that you can pump up and increase by spending more money. And it's kind of not worth it. The first time I went and played through and I got, because the most expensive cyber deck is possibly the most, I mean, I think definitely the most expensive thing you can buy in the game, and starts off with like 250,000 Nuyen. So
yeah, it does take a while to be able to purchase anything worthwhile.
And it's ultimately not really worth it, I don't think.
I guess it depends on how much you like the Matrix, because like I said, it's sort of its own, I don't even want to call it a mini game, because there's, yeah, it's got its own combat system. They've got their own maps. It's, yeah.
You can find various maps, and like when you log in, you'll be at, you know, whatever the entry point of this network is, and then you'll move from node to node. There are different types of nodes, some of which, you know, they're represented on the on these kind of maps that it will display as you move through, as you kind of lawnmower man fly your way through as this silver avatar.
Yep, Pepsi Man. Yep.
Yeah, and you'll come to different nodes, some of which like store data, which is what you're there to get files most of the time.
Yeah, and there's you know, different attacks and different things you can equip in the Matrix to make your run a little easier. But for me, it just felt a little cumbersome. And again, this is also without the aid of the manual, which, as we previously mentioned, the manual does have some good information about how the Matrix actually works, but the game doesn't tell you any of this stuff. So if you just pick this up and play, it's, you kind of just have to bump around until you figure it out.
I would not recommend that. This will, you will, you, because it, you know, you'll kind of just blunder through ineffectively, because there's several different types of nodes. And usually what you're looking for are like the data stores. I believe those are the square nodes, and you're looking, throughout it. Some nodes of various types will be guarded by ICEs, which are computer programs there to kick you out. So, and you got to fight those. You can like load what I think four, I guess it depends on the amount of space in your cyber deck you have left, but it's got what are kind of like different attacks or spells that you equip and use while you're going through. And to be honest,
all these, ICs are represented by this geometric shape, right? Or does it change at some point?
No, the IC, those are the nodes. The ICs are just like they're in one of them, and you won't see them till you get up there, and then you'll typically see like a weird orb, and then once you attack it, it'll reveal what kind of, there's different kinds of ICs, and they're pretty tricky. So, but in general, you know, it's like you can just kind of power your way through once you know what you're doing.
For your playthrough, did you spec your character to be a Decker? Did you just hire someone to take care of the IC or the Matrix runs?
I did not. I hired the elf lady. She's the best one you can get, and I just hired her permanently, and I would use her, even though you don't really have to. You can hire them for one run and just go, because there's kind of a cheat you can use. Well, not really cheat, but it's an exploit you can use to get a lot of money, where you keep doing easy Matrix runs till you get this one specific one you want, because it's the easiest, like each network is like a little dungeon you're exploring, basically, where it's like, go in here and get this thing. And you can either, you can fight the monsters with your different, like you have an attack program. But yeah, and you can use these to attack them, blah, blah, blah. They'll take a certain amount of damage. You can buff up, you know, not only by having a more experienced decker, but and a better deck. But there's a super useful one called Degrade that I found was the big key for me to unlocking it, where you have to get this. You can only purchase it not from a cyber deck store, but by through contacts that you get through some people. But once you do, it basically, like, you use it on the IC, and it weakens it. It de-levels it. So you can do that a couple times. You know, if you hit it twice, three times, then you'll just be able to kill any one of these ICs. There's a lot of different spells, so to speak, or these programs that all kind of suck. It's like they work, but they're not really. But this Degrade was the big one for me, that was like, okay, now I can just use this to weaken the enemy, as opposed to spending tens of thousands of Nuyen on upgrading my cyber deck.
So the pro tip is to get Degrade.
Yeah, I would say. And
so as we mentioned in the first episode, we do need a data jack in order to enter the Matrix at all, which will run you about $400 at Little Chiba's.
That's true. Most of the cyber decker, the decker shadow runners already have it. I think they all do.
I think they do, yeah.
And so that's nice. But
was it Rihanna you used?
Yes, I used Rihanna. I also used, I think it's Phantom. He's the earlier, less experienced one. I used him at the beginning for a few because, you know, you can accept these easy, medium, or hard matrix runs with various payouts, you know, up to several thousands of Nuyen. But along the way, you can get into these data stores and just, you can get up to, I think, 5 files that you can hold on. You can just keep uploading from the same data store. Once you get all those, and then you leave, you can go. There's a gentleman, Roscoe. He's down in the southwest corner of downtown Seattle. And in fact, located right next to a phone. So you can just go right there, get into the matrix, and you can go to any, you can go to a random kind of computer network. I wouldn't recommend that because you could get thrown into one of the super huge hard ones. And, you know, they have bigger, tougher ICs that will crush you so fast if you're not ready. But if you are, or if you get one of these easy runs, like I did, I read about this sweet trick where it'll basically take you to the very easiest dungeon, or I'm sorry, network. And you just go in, it's got a really close data node that you can just upload as much or steal as much as you can, then leave. You know, you won't finish the run until you go back to whatever Johnson or whoever hired you. Yeah. So you can, while you have that address locked in, you can just keep going in, getting this data, leaving, walking over, you know, you're right next to Roscoe's, sell that data. You know, I sometimes, if you're lucky, because it's all just random on the value of the data, but I think the most I've gotten is like 22, 23,000 Nuyen just for one run. And it only takes a few minutes. And it's like, you can just keep bopping in and out and get all the money you'll ever need super fast. So
that is significant. That's So I missed out on that, but I did have a similar trick for all you non-matrix people out there that don't spend a lot of time in there. There's another run you can do that. So different jobs you can pick up from the Johnsons. There's kind of two different types once you get to mid game, which is these acquisition runs and extraction runs. And there's a specific acquisition run that you get in Seattle, I think. And I believe it's from Caleb Brightmore, but it's always for the Lone Star building. And so an acquisition run, you're just raiding a safe and it's randomly spawned inside the building. So one of the safes will have the files that you're trying to extract. And once you get that, you go turn that mission in. Well, this Lone Star building has a safe in the very first room, which means you don't even have to fight anybody. You can just walk inside, check the safe. And if it's not in that opening safe, walk outside, walk back in, check the safe again. Just keep doing it over and over again. And every time you do that and turn this mission in, I think you get like 4,000 Nuyen or something.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a little time, but I mean, it's easy. It's low threat.
Right on. Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good segue because I don't want to dwell too much on the cyberspace because while it is, I think it's a better, a more fun adaptation of it than, say, the Super Nintendo one because it's more
Absolutely.
Like you're going in there and there's different things you can do. You set off alarms. You got to go back to the CPU and turn those off and then, or you'll just get kicked out.
I guess it's worth mentioning, too, that you don't have to do a single Matrix run to get through this game. There's no story mission that requires you to go into the Matrix. This is purely just there for you to make money and level your characters up.
Sure. Yeah. And there is a kind of sub quest you can do that when you start getting to the more advanced networks, you know, taking the higher end Matrix runs, you'll start to slowly get these weird data files that have messages and they'll show up in your like clues and tips part of your personal assistant.
Okay.
It's pretty fun because you have these different like megacorps, the Ares and Fucci and these different, and you start getting these emails from each of them. They're talking about, if you recall in the Redmond Barrens, there's the nuclear power plant there.
Yeah.
And it's basically you figure out they all have a letter at the end for the code, which eventually will spell out Chernobyl. And their plan is to blow up that nuclear plant and collect all the insurance for the entire city.
Oh, that is so sick. I had no idea.
Yeah.
So
I was like, that's fun. And you can stop them. And then once you do, it's kind of anticlimactic because you're like, well, after doing that, then you give yourself a nice bonus of 50,000 Nuyen, which is like, hey, that's not bad, except that's a drop in the ocean after what you'd have to spend to have already made it there, you know?
Yeah, that's a testament to how big this game is and how ambitious it is. I mean, like it or not, this game set out to do a lot of stuff, and it did do a lot of stuff. There's some really incredible writing. The world building is nuts. Like, it's so painfully obvious that this is based on a pre-existing IP, because there's just too much going on for this to just be a Sega Genesis game, you know? It's just,
Yeah, it's good stuff. This is a good segue, I think, to go from the Matrix. We can kind of talk a little more about the different types of Shadow Runs, because like you mentioned, the acquisition runs, there's kind of similar to at the very beginning back in the Redmond Barrens, where it'd be like, go here and get this. Sometimes it's a person, sometimes it's a thing, you know, that you're getting out of a safe and stuff.
Yeah.
When you're actually going into these big headquarters, it's a different story because you have to deal with a lot of different things.
Yeah, you got to deal with the sound of that alarm going off constantly.
The worst. That's one thing that I hope you have an electronics kit and the thing to turn that off, because even if you're invincible, once the alarm's going off, you can't do anything. You just got to sit and wait and keep killing guys until the alarm shuts off, and it just takes forever.
Yeah, speaking of electronics, have we talked about the mag locks and the safes? Because there's a whole skill tied to that. There's way, I mean, you can use a frag grenade to blow open a safe, but then you run the risk of the alarm going off, or you could just level up your electronics to get into these things. So yeah, there's a lot of customization to how you want to attack these different runs.
Yeah, and or you can buy those, you know, go through the black market, so to speak. You can get mag lock keys, like of the different levels,
those which I are did expensive, at first. Though, right?
Yes, I spent like $20,000 on the highest one, and then much later into the game discovered how much easier, where I was like, oh, you only need like an electronics 5 or 6 to get through any of this stuff, so it's not worth all the amount of time it would take to get that money, I think. But I did it. Yeah, because most of the time it's just like you're going through these big office buildings searching safes or in just slaughtering people hoping to sneak by the alarms. If you have a high charisma, you can talk your way out of it, or you're going to want to buy a badge. Like, you really got to, there's a lot of neat tools that you use to infiltrate in whatever fashion you desire.
Indeed. And this is all stuff you can do at your own leisure too. I mean, this is, so the game is, as we previously had talked about, it's just how many different ways you can play this thing. It's once you get Michael's stuff in the beginning of the game, that's sort of your tutorial portion of the game where you're stuck right there in Redmond Barrens. But once you get out of there, it's the world's your oyster, and you can there's a couple different plot lines. I think there's 3 or 4 plot lines that you have to complete before you can go to the end of the game, but it's really up to you how you want to do that. And then from there, it's do you want to deck into the Matrix, do you want to do these acquisition runs? It's you know, you can do whatever you want, man.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun because, you know, you're playing through a story, but you have this lush world and it's all just there for you to level up and power up your way to get through the story. So you can kind of dip in and out of either as you like. All right, it's time for general chat, which should be interesting because there's a lot to chat about in this game.
Indeed. So I don't know if we mentioned all the actual areas in this game, but we've got Redmond Barrens, then we've got downtown Seattle, the Pileup Barrens, Penumbra District, Council Island, and then Rinraku Arcology, which I think is sort of our in-game area.
You know, and there are points where there's the like Salishy wilderness and stuff where are a little harder to get to. You have to get like a passport and do this other stuff.
Yeah, all these areas are around the same size. Yeah, you kind of get used to the flow of the game after you go to a couple different places, except for when you get to the Salishy area and some of the wilderness areas, which if there was a point in this game that you're going to get lost, it's probably going to be navigating those caves out in the wilderness, because it can be a little confusing.
Absolutely. They all look the same. It's kind of rough.
Yeah.
Which kind of, when you think about the graphics in this game,
I actually think it looks really good. I actually prefer the Super Nintendo to the Sega Genesis, but I think these Genesis graphics are really nice. The artwork is good.
There are certain things, like, I think on the whole, they're pretty good. You know, like, we talked the last episode about the different, like, facial portraits and how they just start, like, color swapping through them. There's not a lot of different, like, I don't know, much like the other one where I'm like, I could have used a few more different, like, sprite types to, when you're getting attacked, you're just like, ah, it's another guy, I don't know, or, you know, they don't look too terribly different. I do want to talk about the music, because...
Yeah. Took the words out of my mouth. I was curious what your thoughts were. See, I think the music in this game fits the vibe of the game very well. I can't not compare this to the Super Nintendo one. I think the Super Nintendo Shadowrun had better tracks, but I think this game has a closer to the vibe of, it's just grittier. It feels more like, and something about the sound card in the Genesis just lends itself to this world.
I agree. I think it, for the most part, it works pretty well because whoever, you know, composed this, the compositions are good, but I don't think they were that good at using the weird FM synthesizer that the Genesis has, because for the most part, you'll get some really good. These are kind of like vibe songs. They're not really like your typical, if you think of like Mario Brothers, you know, these are more just like setting an atmosphere, you know, kind of groove bass lines and stuff in the background. But some of it, I mean, when you get to these like high pitched, twangy, it's real tinny. It sounds rough, man. And like, I would just turn the volume down in some places where it's like, all right, I can't take this.
Now, let me just ask in general, it seems to me, based on what I know about you, Nick, and your history with gaming, that this appeals more to you than the Super Nintendo version, right? It's just, I know you love RPGs and the customization. Yeah. I know you're a tabletop fan, so this is right up your alley, right?
Yeah, in some ways, I think more so what they were aiming for than what they, you know, because I think this is really interesting stuff, but kind of imperfectly realized, where, you know, like the whole start of this game is rough, man. And it's like, that's like one of its biggest sins, because it will turn a lot of people, including myself, who I'm like in the target audience in a lot of ways. And it takes a while to see past that. And then once you do, and then you're like, oh, well, all this stuff's expensive. And then I was, you know, I took it upon myself to be like, I got to figure out how to use the Matrix, and I got to figure this stuff out. And then once I did, it was always really rewarding, but I just think they make it a little too hard on the player sometimes, you know, especially for more casual fans who wouldn't want to sort through all of that, you know?
Yeah, it seems this game is universally beloved on the internet. Everyone seems to love this game. It's just one of those understated classics that has a huge fan base, but you're dead on. When I listened to the first episode again, I initially, when we recorded it, I thought that I was being a little harsh on the game, but when I listened to it back, I thought I was actually being kind of nice, because the beginning of this game is very, very, like, if you handed this to somebody, they would just walk out in the street and be immediately pummeled and go to the hospital over and over again. And it's like, what's going on here?
It really makes you feel like you're doing something wrong, you know?
Yeah. So, and that's something else I wanted to talk to you about, is this is a good game, but I think pacing is an issue with this game, because it starts off very tough, and it doesn't really, there are no training wheels whatsoever. It doesn't really tell you a whole lot. And then you get to this lull where, okay, I've kind of figured out what's going on. I'm doing some runs with some Johnsons. I'm figuring out the Matrix. And then you're kind of just making money and you're earning karma at that point. And it's not too crazy. Mm-hmm. And then you get to these weird spikes where there's a couple missions that just, again, beat you into submission. And you're like, okay, well, I guess I need to just go back to doing runs, or, you know, it's just, there is a lot of grinding. I can't say that enough.
This back and forth. While you can use the Matrix to make all the money you want relatively very quickly, that's not karma. That's only, you know, money's only half the battle. So sadly, the most efficient way to get karma is to go back to the very first place and do those Gunderson, you know, you just get, because it's, you can get a karma every like 30 seconds. So from these super fast, especially later when you're like, I'm invincible, these punky Halloweeners mean nothing to me. I'll kill them all.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was reading some comments from people that had played this game, and came across this one fellow that had played this game for 20 something years, had never beaten it, and all he did was just runs and just had millions and millions of credits and karma. And some people do that, man. That some people get a lot of joy and a lot of fun out of that. Personally, I think the best part about this game is the writing and the story. I had a lot of fun just meeting all the characters and reading everything they had to say, because the writing is top notch. So I did feel like I kind of rushed a little bit trying to get to through all the story missions. Did miss out on some Matrix stuff there, but
you're right. The writing is very good, and there's a lot of really cool detail in it, because, you know, like in the Matrix, you're going, you get this data file, but you can get all these other ones, and they're all like, okay, these are secret emails of this guy, or this is our, you know, product rollout plan. They all have like these little weird, like a real file would, or, you know, the comments people make, or the, especially in the we'll call the random encounters where you're just walking and then a window pops up. They all have something that just really adds to the atmosphere of the game and it makes the world feel like it's a real place.
Yeah, I still don't know why people stop you in the street and take a picture and run away. It creeps me out.
I know. Yeah. I thought that was going to add up to something at the end, but it never did. Now, let's talk a little bit about the interface of the play control here.
Sure.
Because I don't think we've touched on this yet, but this is one of the game's weaknesses, I think. Your movement is weird. You don't... If you press left, you don't start moving left. You turn left. You start arcing. It feels like you're a car person. Like, you can't quite move, and it doesn't really affect the gameplay that much because, you know, you're not platforming or anything, but it's just a weird, weird choice that would drive me nuts sometimes.
It can be very frustrating when you're in a cave, for instance, and there are ghouls coming at you, and you need to get out of a door or something, and you press back to run backward, and Joshua has to do this big sweeping loop. Yes. I'm like, come on, man.
Arcing around, they're doing like a 3-point turn or whatever, but
it's not bad, but it's just a little bit strange.
It is. In a more action-based game, it would be a real problem, but I don't think it is here. It's just kind of an annoyance.
Now, I found the menu to not be bad, but a little clunky.
Yeah.
Just navigating just the way that you have to use the buttons to move around. I think you got to use the start button to back up every screen.
It's a weird, yeah, they make some interesting choices here, which I kind of commend them for because I do like the idea where it's like, okay, I'm using my personal assistant. So it's like this little computer thing you've got with different buttons, but it's like you just have to memorize what each of these like buttons, they'll have like a little 2-letter abbreviation that's kind of arbitrary. You got to remember that, memorize all those, how to equip these different things, and going into these different menus can be a little intimidating at first. It definitely takes practice to get used to where, I mean, it does kind of look cooler and fit the setting that you have that, but it's also not as quick or efficient as just a normal, like a menu-based system would be.
Yeah, and one of my larger gripes too is the healing system, which is all, you do that in the menu. So if you've got med kits, and which you're going to need for the final fight, is stocked up med kits. So every time you want to heal, you have to go to your menu and hit those med kits, which slows things down a little bit and can make the fights feel a little cumbersome.
Yeah, it's this also kind of like the Super Nintendo one, like skirts the action RPG thing where you're in combat and... But like you said, you have to pause it and go to the menu. Like, or if you're even using magic, then that's another thing where you can only have like one spell equipped. So every time you have to like stop, go in there, switch your spell, you know, change these things, use this, heal this, heal that. It's however, I found that in most of the game, the combat was pretty easy. Like I was usually, I guess, overpowered. I don't know. I had so much money and stuff that I was able to kill most threats pretty quick, but you know, every now and then you do get those surprise, like where it's like, oh shit, hellhounds, or you don't react fast enough, and then by that time, because no matter how tough you are, you still only have 100% for health, like you know, it can go down really quick.
I was waiting to mention the hellhounds, but that's there's maybe two or three fights in this game that spring up on you that are just seem to be a lot harder than the rest, and there's a point where you do have to find these hellhounds, right? And why do they seem like the hardest thing in the game? Like every time the hounds come, it's you know, I'm going back to the hospital.
No, there were definitely some early points where they slaughtered me. And it's just like, okay, well, I guess I gotta go, you know, you level up, get some more cyberware, get, you know, get all your armor and gear and stuff and head back, you know.
Like, and then in terms of the menu too, and healing, it's, you know, most fights you can see your health going down, you can stop, you can go into the menu and hit a med kit, but those hounds kill you so fast,
I
would be dead before I'd even get in there.
You gotta be on it, you know. But I think in general, like, I think like you said, where people will just play through the game without actually doing the story, and there, it is very addictive to, there's this kind of character improvement loop that, at least for me, worked really well because you don't have to wait on an entire level. Like, you're just leveling up individual skills or attributes. So it's a smaller goal than leveling up everything in one big step. And some of them, you know, like when you're leveling up your persuasion and your blah, 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 then it really, truly... Like, you can see the effects of it, like, as soon as you level, you're like, okay, now I'm going to do runs and I'm getting more money. Or now everything in the stores costs 10% less. It's not a lot, but I'm getting there, and I'm feeling the effects now.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that you've got 10 shadow runners that, you know, you can hire and level separately, and they carry their own gear. You can customize every one of those characters. There's a lot to play with there.
Yes, definitely. And then for what it's worth, I mean, we've been kind of treating it as an afterthought because in a way the game does too, but the story is pretty good. It's just, there's nothing too crazy, but it's another kind of noir mystery story that you would expect from this kind of setting, similar to the Super Nintendo one in certain ways.
Yeah, I would say the story is serviceable. I think the characters make it pretty good. The story itself is pretty light. I mean, you're trying to figure out who killed Michael. You find out who killed Michael, then you go kill that guy. But the people you meet along the way are very interesting. Like I said, yeah. The writing just really shines here.
I agree.
I just wanted to say, too, that I don't think I've ever played or read or watched something that had so many different themes going on at the same time. I mean, this game is high fantasy. It's a lot of Native American influence, cyberpunk. It's a lot of stuff at the same time. It's interesting.
Yeah, that is one of the big appeals, I think, is the, you know, not only to the video games, but to the tabletop game itself, where it's a unique setting. You know, you get magic and tech and in the future and crazy. It's fun. It's fun to see.
So we had just left Redmond, right?
Yes. So having purchased all of your brother's stuff from Stoker's Coffin, you will now find that taxi cabs are available and you can get out of the Redmond Barrens.
Yeah. And also you'll get Michael's wristband, which now if you die, guess where you're going? Seattle Hospital.
That's right. Which is a good thing now after you've leveled up a bit. You get some karma. One of the things we get from Michael was a note from someone named Tabitha Shale.
We get holopics, right, of Dr. Havershine, which I believe is where we're supposed to go next to go figure out if she knows what happened to Michael. And she is located in the pile of barons. Yeah, that's the weird thing with level by level with this game is that you can kind of attack it in different ways, as I understand it. You don't have to follow the same path that everyone else does. I mean, I just followed a walkthrough.
I definitely did, because again, it was like, you know, you dip in and out of the story. Yeah, so we get a note and we head to the Poil Up Barrens, and we go to the Tara Slar City Inn, which is kind of in the northeast, and the lady will kind of tell you, she gives you some information about Michael's last shadow run and how hired through Caleb Brightmore. And that's the guy, we have his holopics.
Yep, but in a twist of fate, she is killed by gunfire.
That's right. She doesn't make it far.
So a man in red and black will run off, and then on her body, we're going to find another holopix.
That's right, of David Owlfeather. And we also got a clue about Boris Erasco's place.
Yeah, so David Owlfeather, that's a whole plot line in its own. It's one of the three that we need to complete before we can get to endgame.
Yeah, you basically get three leads that will take you down these different paths. You can take them all in any order, any of the three in any order.
Yeah.
But you'll keep going through the sequence of them. But as far as Boris Erasco, you can follow that lead back to the Redmond Barrens, and he's in the greenhouse because it's Boris's greenhouse, right?
Yep, and he's gonna charge you 500 new yen for some information, so make sure you got some money on you.
It ain't cheap. You can go through and pay off the skin flint. You know, he tells you that he had talked to Michael and that he was followed by Mako Socho, a Renraku executive.
Yep, and it's at this point that you get your first interaction with the Renraku strike teams, which are going to pop up later, but this is one of the first, I think, points in which you might need to level up a little bit, because these guys are tough. So you essentially get jumped while you're talking to this guy, and you're forced into fighting this strike team, and they're pretty powerful for early game. So I even took these guys on, I spent a lot of time in Redmond just doing ghoul runs to level up a little bit.
Oh, same here, man. I was doing a lot of grinding early on, which was also kind of exploring how this game and world works.
Yeah. But if we can defeat him, Boris is going to tell us where we can find David Owlfeather.
That's right. Which is he's out in the Amerindian village, right?
Yes. Salishite, is that where he's located?
Well,
at any rate, we're nearing a point in the game that I found myself asking multiple times, why did they add this? Why do I need a passport? Why do I need to pay money every time to go to this? It drives me crazy.
That's something, maybe I should have touched on this in the general chat, that I feel like they, and I've seen this in other games too, that I've played as console adaptations of, say, older D&D games or things, right? Where there's something in this, you know, like the passport, well, it's like, well, that just makes sense. In the real world, you might need it because there are separate people and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, okay, but I'm playing a game. But it's like things, they just import everything, warts and all, whether it works out best for this medium or not. So you get these kind of weird things where you're like, this kind of sucks, but you got to do it. But I mean,
and to be clear, I don't think we really touched on it, but anytime you want to go to Council Island or you want to go to Salishidhe or any of the Amerindian lands, you have to have a passport and you can't have a police record. So if you're out there killing people on the streets and Lone Star knows about it, you're not going to be able to travel out there.
That's right.
Unless you fork up the money.
Yeah, you have to like clear your, you either have to just pay them or you can, I'm trying to think, there's a way I pay someone to delete all your records.
If you talk to Sharky for 3,000 new yen, he can clear your record and get you out there. Otherwise, you can get a forged passport for 1,000 new yen from Boris in the greenhouse. But either way, I mean, if you've done any crime, it's going to cost you some money to make it out there. And this is every time you want to go, which you're going to be going back and forth. So it.
You want to plan your stuff. I'm trying to think. I think there's an exploit where it's like, if you go to like Lone Star and they'll be like, you got to pay X money to clear your record, right?
Yeah.
You can do it, but if you don't have enough money, they'll just take everything you have. And I think they still give it to you. like
really?
I there's a way you can kind of do it, but only if you have like, where it was like, you have to spend all your money and then go do it.
Mm.
But either
way. It's kind of like the free taxi rides if you have no money.
Yeah, I guess. It's kind of a pain in the butt, to be honest. It does add a little bit of realism, I guess, but that's what you're looking for. Either way, you come out because there's the wilderness and there's the Council Island village. And
yes.
The village is where you can go. You can get your passport there. And there's like some other locations. You know, this is more like a town you can talk to. There's the Orc Embassy and there's a magic store here.
Yeah, once you get to Council Island as well, that's your scenery changes. I mean, up until this point, it's all been like a dirty city. You're just, you know, in different parts of Seattle. But now we've kind of get to the Native American inspired areas. And with that comes a new set of enemies, too. So we've got those aforementioned hellhounds, which suck. And then there's some yetis that come after you. And then I think we encounter our first invisible characters, enemies.
Yeah, you'll see them. They look like the cloaked predator.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to find David Owlfeather is kind of tricky because he is in the wilderness. So
now, I don't know if you know or not, but do we need to talk to Frosty at this point to go after David Owlfeather, or can we skip Frosty for now?
I don't think you have to talk to Frosty yet.
Okay.
I think that comes
Which Frosty later. Is one of the elves that ends up being a main character.
Yeah, but David Owlfeather is in a lodge, which is hard to locate.
He's in Salishidhe, right? The wilderness part of...
Yeah, in the American Indian or the Amerindian village. Yeah, you know, there's a couple different lodges and buildings you can go into, and one of the larger ones is where you'll find Owlfeather. And you know, after talking to him, he says, you know, he knows someone who can help, but he wants you to do something for him, and that's to find his brother Aragorn.
Aragorn. A lot of references in this game. We got the Matrix. We got Aragorn. We got a Harlequin.
No.
And then Boris tells us that Aragorn had taken a run from a local Johnson and hasn't been seen since. So we got to start talking to the Johnsons around the city and ask about Aragorn.
Yes, which will quickly lead us to one particular Johnson, Mortimer Reed.
Mortimer Reed in the Penumbra District.
Penumbra. So
looks like the fuzz busted him too. He's incarcerated in Mitsuhama.
That's right. He messed up on a shadow run, so he's being held prison. So this is basically an extraction. This is our first kind of real big challenge, depending on how early you're trying to start this. So yeah, you're going to definitely have to do some grinding here because, you know, the expensive way is that, you know, you're doing a raid, a corporation raid. So you're going to want high charisma or a corporate badge, which is like 6,700 New Yen. And again, you're going to need a Maglock pass key or an electronics kit. You know, you can either pay 15 or 20 grand for a Maglock key, or you can just get level 5 or 6 electronics in and the kit, which is like a thousand. I don't know. It's way less. It's
easier. Yeah.
Yeah. I was skeptical when I first started, where I was like, I'm going to get the key just to be sure. But then once I found it, it was like, wow, it really does work.
Now, the Maglock key, is that's a permanent item, right? Or is that a one-time use?
No, that is permanent. And if you're going to go that route, it really is. I mean, it's best to just save up and get the level 5 one, so you don't ever have to keep buying other ones, you know? But you have to make a contact. I think Alessandro Hobbs and all this stuff. So I say go for I think you can get the electronics kit at the crime mall or something.
Which, real quick, if you want to talk about the crime mall, that's a certain area in Penumbra? Pilot Barrens? But it's got some of the best stuff in the game. However, you have to align with the mob, right? In order to be able to buy any of that stuff?
There are certain things. I don't think you have to align with the mob to buy anything, but I know you do to get certain the better stuff, I think. Because it's another thing too, where it's like there are some things you can only find there, and then there are other things that you can buy there or at other stores, but with different prices and different, you know, so it's kind of crazy.
Mm.
But either way, you're going to need a way through these things.
Well, good old Mortimer Reed and the big rhino in Penumbra is going to tell us that, again, Aragorn was incarcerated, so now our job is to bust him out. He also tells us that Mako Sochu spends a lot of time in Club Penumbra. It's another little lead we can chase.
Yeah, which that name was dropped by Boris as well, so we'll definitely have to check out that. But for now, we have to fight our way up to Aragorn's room. And this is where the game can be very frustrating, because there are certain, like, gosh, I want to say kiosks, but what are like a little, they're not quite the phone booth, you know, the video phone booths, but they're like a terminal. That's what I'm looking for. You can use your electronics to shut off the alarm, or you can use it to get like certain clues and things. It's pretty interesting. But the main thing is shutting off that damn alarm so that the enemies will quit spawning and you can try to make some progress. You can run through just searching for old Aragorn, but you know, you kind of mentioned earlier that there are safes and stuff, and you can go through and raid, you know, you can just keep going to every safe and getting as much money as you want, but depending on your skills, you might set off an alarm again. So it's always like, is it worth it or not? Like,
yeah, and these safes can have anything from money to medkits to grenades, which obviously you can sell the grenades and medkits, so it all just kind of equates to some more new yen for your pocket. Real quick, so when you're in these buildings and the alarms are going off, enemies attack you, do they just keep spawning over and over? I don't remember if you clear a floor, if they stop coming at some point. I think they do, right?
They will. I mean, eventually the alarm will just turn itself off. I don't know if it's... I'm not sure, because I'll tell you what. Here was my trick, right? This game can only handle like six enemy sprites at once. So if you kill an enemy, then they leave a dead body. So if you can kill 6 people on the same screen, then you only have to worry, you know, or even if it's just 4, you know, you kill 4, you're surrounded by 4 bodies, right? Then the most you'll ever see are 2 enemies coming after that. And you can get it to the point where, okay, I've got all these bodies here, so enemies aren't coming. And then I just wait for the alarm to go off.
Okay, maybe that's what it was then, because at some point they just stopped coming, so.
Yeah, but it's like, you can, don't let that fool you, because you can trip another alarm and then start the whole thing over.
Yes, indeedy.
But yes, so I'm not sure what floor, you know, you can use the, right, it's in the, if you use your electronics kit on certain terminals, they'll give you clues at least as to what floor certain, you know, like in this case, Aragorn, or what certain goals are. Are on, so whichever floor is on.
Aragorn is on the 5th floor, as I understand it. So, because I went straight there when I looked it up. So I'm not going to mess around with these other floors, man.
Right on.
But he is on the 5th floor, and as soon as we find him, he just runs away.
Yeah, what a but jerk.
Mission complete, though, I guess.
Yeah, so then you make your egress from this Mitsuhama.
We're in Mitsuhama.
Mitsuhama, okay. Yes. So you can leave the old Mitsuhama place and head back to the Amerindian village to get another passport. So,
yeah. Gonna let David know his brother is free. And then he gives us our next leg of the journey, which is to find the Elder Spirit Eyes.
Yeah, which isn't too far from where we're at, right? Yeah, you can go. Yeah, you want. This is where you want to go to the Council Island, right?
Yes. So this starts the beginning of the ritual plotline, which is on Council Island.
Yeah, he will. Spirit Eyes is a old shaman who you kind of find him out in the, like, he's outside of the buildings, like he's behind the lodge, out in the grass, if I remember right.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's kind of separated from the other people. And yeah. you have to go through a building, right? And then go through like the back door to get to where he's at. Yeah.
Yeah. And he'll give you a kind of fetch quest where you need to get these three items that he will use.
Yes, sir. And this was arguably the most enraging part of the game for me personally, because this is where we are forced to go get some wolf pelts. It's one of the items that we need to eat. It's not the first one, is it? I can't remember.
No, I think the first you get a gargoyle horn, which you just get by killing gargoyles, and they're not that
chances tough. chances are you already have one at this point, because you can pick one up from killing gargoyles, so you might be good to go on that.
Yeah, if any of those like ghoul runs in the abandoned buildings,
yeah,
the gargoyles will pop up from there. They're not that tough. You can kill them, and you might have, like you said, probably already have one. So that's not too bad. But after that, that's when he wants the hellhound pelt.
The hellhound pelt. Let me ask you this, because this is one of the points in the game where I had to use save states to get this done. What I had to do was save my state out in the wilderness, run around, and as soon as the hellhounds would enter the screen, like the second, I would pause, save state, and try to fight them. And 9 times out of 10, they would kill me. After save stating over and over again and reloading, I eventually killed them. But it took forever, man. Because one, you got to get them to spawn. And when they do, you have to be quick enough, because they come in the screen and rip you up.
By the time I had made it this far, I think I did this chunk of the story later. So I was pretty beefed up by the time I had to do this. So I wasn't too worried. I still died a couple times where it's like you're just kind of wandering around the wilderness and waiting for them to come. And if they appear, if they spawn like too close to you, and depending on how many there are, like, you know, it was like if I can kill them if I can get them before they get to me. But if they make it over, you can get screwed. So still,
yeah,
you can still die very fast. So it was, you know, kind of like a glass cannon, like two of us. But yeah. I was able to do it. I did die a few times, but not a super ton, but it's not.
I
just
did have
you.
To cheese them a little bit. It's if you can get them to spawn near like a rock or a log, and you kind of circle around it, they can get caught on it, so you can, you know, take them out one at a time.
Yeah, which, yeah, that always helps. There's a little bit of that, like very little action tactical stuff.
But once you kill the dreaded hellhounds and get a pelt, our third item and the last item is the scale of a feathered serpent.
Yeah, now this is also kind of, or could be, frustrating, because there's a big wilderness out there, right?
Yeah, so this, we mentioned previously, if you're going to get lost, this is where you're going to get lost, because there's a lot of wilderness and caves we have to navigate, and the caves all kind of look the same, and it's almost like a maze to get through to find the right screen.
It definitely is, because it's like, you know, you'll come to the wilderness, and there's the starting kind of the village where you start, right? And from there, it's like you have three entrances to different caves that connect to other open forest areas that also connect to other caves. There's actually four different wilderness areas you can get. But here, I don't know, the closest I can give directions wise without totally losing all of the listeners is that, you know, you want to keep heading south as best you can, and like south, and if you can't go south and east. So you'll blunder your way into the largest kind of the cave systems, which will kind of curve around, and you'll get down into kind of the very southwest corner of these caves, where you'll come into a room, you know, or a cave room where.
Yeah, it's not so vast and so big that you can't bumble around and find it. You can. It's just going to take some time. There's really only four cave systems you got to deal with, but
they all look almost exactly the same. So that's why it makes exactly. it so frustrating. But yeah, once you get into that final kind of cave thing, it's like, boom, there's a Renraku strike team in there.
Yep. This is our second encounter with the strike team, and they are a lot more difficult this time around.
Yeah, they're total shits. And this is kind of a crowded battlefield as well. So it's kind of hard if you're using firearms, which I was.
Yeah.
But
you at this point, you really need to have some shadow runners with you and some decent kit, some heavy armor if you want to survive this.
Definitely. You need to be buffed up. But you can do it, and you kill them, and then you'll meet the dragon Lycortrix.
Lycortrix.
And this is like a kind of, I'm trying to think, with a feathered serpent or like Coatl, Mesoamerican dragon kind of thing. And
yeah, he's no Nirwanda, but he'll do.
Yeah. So it will give you the scale and bind himself to you.
Yeah, it turns out he's a bro, man. He's friends. He's cool.
Yeah, cool cat. Or a cool dragon, I guess. And from there, you just, you know, battle your way out and head back to that council island to where you can see Spirit Eyes. And he uses the three magic items to perform a ritual and tells you that your enemy is a demon, a jackal-headed demon named Thon.
Thon, our true enemy. We have found out who killed Michael.
Ugh, that's right. You can tell Thon it's on.
Oh, real quick. I took a picture of this because I thought it was interesting, but when you first meet Spirit Eyes, this is his description. His eyes are bottomless black pits that seem to hold the knowledge of centuries of deep sadness, of racial injustices, and a wealth of human compassion. This is Spirit Eyes.
Ooh.
That's a sick intro.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of charm here that they sneak it all in there, and I respect them for it.
Indeed.
All right, and we are going to call it there for this week, Cartridge Commandos. Thank you for listening along with us. But yeah, if you want to get a hold of us for any reason, you want to let us know, hey, are you a Landstalker fan out there? Would you like to see us cover it? Let us know at one of several options. You can do it at cartridgecommand@gmail.com. You could do it on Facebook, Cartridge Command at Facebook. I think we're still Cart Command at X, but I don't know how dependable we'll be on that one, but we always love hearing from everyone. So hit us up. And of course, we want to thank our patrons who support us through thick and thin. And we definitely appreciate all the new yen they toss our way. They're all great chummers, especially, you know, high level patrons like Radiant Blur, who sponsored this episode. And if you guys have any cool or crazy games you'd like to hear us talk about or inflict upon us, you know, they don't all have to be good ones you like. You know, there's that aspect of it, too. You could prank us, make us play X-Men again. I'll do it. I would do it for you and for money. So thank you. Thank you all, patrons. I love you. We love you. 1,000 thanks, my lords and ladies. And as always, Cartridge Commandos, game on.
Game on.
Game on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and because you can... And oh, it just drives me nuts, man. She's not only just trying to get on the keyboard, but rubbing up on the mic where I'm like, Jesus.
She wants attention, man. She wants to be on the pod. Let her speak.